Blog Talk Radio.
Ooh. Yeah. You already know what time it is. It's that official time. When we take this worldwide. Let's go. Listen.
So now it's time to turn it up. Surf the radio waves as we begin to burn it up. We all up in your area like landscape. Definitely bringing you the power slamming pancakes. It's a mandate that you tune in. It's time to move out so we can move in. And recognize that this is no illusion. I'm here to clear the air so that there is no confusion. It all started off in the book of Genesis, when Jacob was wrestling with who he thought was his nemesis. And when the man saw he couldn't overpower him, he touched his hip but he really could have devoured him. And from that point then we hear a name change. Rearrange the game so now we gotta change. So I'm here to let you know it's time to listen to the Pancake and Power Slam Show. Let's go!
Episode number 126. We are here live. Pancakes and Power Slams. This is Chris Featherstone riding solo today. Derek is out with the strep throat, so hopefully you all will send your prayers to him for a speedy recovery. 347-884-8452 is the number to call live. And you know what that means. That means that we're going to have a whole lot more trivia for our Crave Wrestling Facebook page and our Crave Wrestling Twitter page, and also streaming live once again on WeAreWrestling.net. Special shout out to the WeAreWrestling.net peeps. Thank you so much for your support. Just continue to support and all the other wrestling avenues, wrestling websites that I write for. Bleacher Report, Wrestling Inc., What Culture, you name it, and all the other books that I've been asked to do interviews on and a whole lot of other stuff. So continue to support. Thank you so much, and I appreciate all of your support. So with that being said, we've usually got some good, fun people who knows their wrestling in the both in the chat room and in the live comment thread at WeAreWrestling.net. So I'm going to load you up with trivia questions today to see how good you are. And of course, many people know within these 2.5 years that I ask a conglomerate of trivia questions that varies from 70s, 80s, 90s, 2000s, 2010s. So it's very, very it's a plethora, a smorgasbord, if you will, of questions. So very, very excited to see how smart you are this week. Let's start with the first trivia question. The first trivia question is, name five different Brutus Beefcake gimmicks, or Ed Leslie, name five different gimmicks from Ed Leslie. You can include Brutus Beefcake in the five. You can include Brutus Beefcake in a five, but if you're smart enough, if you're really good in trivia, you'll actually give me six. You'll give me six. Including Brutus Beefcake, you can give me six different characters of Brutus Beefcake. Yeah, so that'll be fun. But, you know, of course, you know, you can include Brutus Beefcake, but if you really want to show your skills, you'll give me six, including Brutus, so we'll see where we are from there. 347-884-8452 is the number to call live. Once again, 347-884-8452 is the number to call live. Let's get into Raw talk without further ado. We get Mr. McMahon coming in. No Chance music comes on. Of course, when that music comes on, it's going to be pretty, it's always pretty interesting. It's always something fun to look forward to. But he comes in with the authority. He comes in with Triple H, and he comes in with Stephanie McMahon. And it seems like they were pretty, you know, kind of distant from Vince McMahon in the first place. It didn't seem like it was an angle being built or anything. It seemed like it was some type of announcement generated, and it pretty much was that. Vince McMahon, of course, pushing the November free month for the WWE Network. Before I go forward, very interesting tweet that Matt Hardy actually put out was, you know, for those who, you know, people are getting, you know, free November, you know, what do you do to the people who's been, you know, having the WWE Network all this time? Do you give them a free month too? And I agree with that. I think that's a great idea, especially the people who, like myself, who got it relatively early, almost immediately. So so far I see two correct ones here. The Disciple and the Booty Man. Those are two correct ones. So if it's six all together, we have Brutus Beefcake, we have the Disciple, we have the Booty Man, and there's three more. There's three more. Which is very interesting. Very, very interesting. I think the Disciple, real quick, I think the Disciple was probably, other than Brutus Beefcake, I think Ed Leslie, his best gimmick was the Disciple, because I remember when he came back from the NWO, he came back to the NWO as the Disciple, and this guy, I mean, he had like a long beard, he was ripped, and his hair was long. And, I mean, he looked like a legitimate bad boy. I mean, he looked like a no-nonsense, really, really stiff bodyguard. And yikes, I mean, it was really hard to tell. Talk about your transformations. I was doing some writing about a year or two ago, and I was thinking about just different characters who had like night and day almost transformations. Rikishi's one of those people who had a bunch of gimmicks, and his best gimmick was Rikishi, but of course he was the Sultan, and so from the Sultan to Rikishi is almost a night and day type of thing. But the thing is with Ed Leslie, with Brutus Beefcake, I mean, you talk about your night and day. From Brutus Beefcake to the Disciple, he wasn't even really recognizable until people had to really pay attention to who he was. It was an amazing character that he had. And of course, with WCW at the time, it was really, they really didn't, it's like they had amazing ideas, but their follow through was not very good. That's the problem with WCW back in those days. They had amazing gimmicks, but their follow through was horrible. I watched the Goldberg Monday Night Wars, and I had some friends talk about how biased the Monday Night War series is. I can see it because the funny thing, I was going to tweet this today. It seems like the Monday Night War series on the WWE Network is kind of like a self destruction series, kind of like, you know, when they had the self destruction of the Ultimate Warrior back in the day about 10, 12 years ago, and it kind of seems like we're seeing that with this Monday Night War series. It's not really a Monday Night War series per se. It's more like a, hey, this is how these are all the factors that WCW had, but yet and still they couldn't defeat us. That's what it really seems like. And the sad part about that is, I think if they were a little bit more unbiased about the whole thing, especially with the Goldberg thing, this guy, and I remember I'm going on a sidebar, of course, but it's worth talking about. I remember when that match when he had in Regal in '98, and it's funny how they said that they were doing that to, you know, give Goldberg a wrestling clinic against William Regal to show how much he can't wrestle. But here's the thing. Whose fault is that? It's not – I wouldn't blame it on Goldberg. I would blame it on the creative staff, because there's so many people that are taking bumps at the power plant, and you guys – the WCW staff, the WCW creative staff, the booking staff, they were the ones that decided to make a green, no knowledge of professional wrestling, no history of professional wrestling from a collegiate level, no knowledge. He had the look. He had the intensity. It was a executive decision to bring up Goldberg based on the few moves that he had. So I wouldn't put the blame on Goldberg that he showed his vulnerability in wrestling, because you knew that from the very beginning. It just didn't make any type of sense to me to put him in a match against William Regal to expose how much he couldn't wrestle. See, as much as we don't like John Cena, as much as old school wrestlers or traditionalists aren't fans of John Cena at all, you have to admit that Vince McMahon, even with the selective arsenal that John Cena brings, Vince McMahon does a very good job in protecting the character, protecting the John Cena character, and that's what really has made him over the past dozen years, definitely the past decade, but really the past dozen years, that's what's made John Cena over. Not because he's a Bret Hart or Shawn Michaels, or an Eddie Guerrero in the ring, but he's a character in a sports entertainment company that Vince McMahon wanted to put over and push, so he protected the character very, very well, and he still does. And that's how you make stars. That's how you make people. Same thing with Hogan. The same thing with Hogan. 84, 85, mid-80s, Hogan couldn't wrestle the best wrestler that they offered at the time. You know, during those times, you know, you were battling with the likes of, you know, still, you know, behemoths like a King Kong Bundy and an Andre the Giant. But yet still, you know, you still had some collar elbows here and there with Jake Roberts, and you know Roddy Piper was a decent wrestler, and so, you know, Curt Hennig, he had a short feud with Curt Hennig still, but yet and still you had the Hulk Hogan, who decided to have a character, had that character protected, and that's what made him, you know, the most recognizable wrestler in all of pro wrestling history. So that's how you make stars. You don't just say, let me throw you out here and see how you do. You invest in them. You invest in those people. Steve Austin can put on a good match, but yet and still, he wasn't the best wrestler offered. Same thing with The Rock. When the first few years of The Rock was certainly not a good wrestler whatsoever. but he had the look, he had the character, they protected the character, and they knew how to invest in it. But with Goldberg, they had the look, they had the character, but they decided to end the streak from a cattle prod from Scott Hall pretending to be a security personnel. How in the world can you develop a character, a lasting character in the WCW, when you have someone who was your guy? I mean, 1998 was Goldberg's year to become a legend, and you end it from a cattle prod? Makes absolutely no sense at all. It's just ridiculous. If you want to end the streak, he needed to go against a Bret Hart or a Sting, someone of that caliber that can actually have a good match to show that he could give a good 10 minutes, that he has improved in the ring. He could give you a good 10 minutes. It needed to be a really, really good match, a clinic of a match, and at the very end, Goldberg leaves with his head up high saying that, yes, I lost, the streak is over, but I lost in a darn good match against one of the best ever, a Sting or a Bret Hart, someone of that nature. That's how you should have ended a streak, not some daggone taser or cattle prod. Absolutely no sense. That's how you protect the character, not end their streak based on some ridiculous spot because you had too many people talking in the back. Makes absolutely no sense. But it was, and great comment here says that was easy in his stupidity that crushed WCW in the end. It sure did, because there wasn't a good sense of character development. It was way too many people talking in the back, and you know, a lot of people say that it was not good business when. A lot of people say it wasn't good business when Hogan. The Butcher. Good job there. There's a few more gimmicks that he was. Let us know what he was. But like I said, I mean, WCW, they could have really competed against WWE as far as a lasting standpoint. I think it was, 82 weeks, so nearly 2 years that they, you know, led in the ratings because they had that edgy character, because they had the NWO becoming more and more prominent in the show, not because you had people like Kevin Nash leading. I mean, you know, no knock to Kevin Nash; he's a legend in the business. But Kevin Nash was never a top guy that led WCW or WWE into the sunset. I mean, he was never that guy. So, you know, it doesn't make sense at all to say that, but people like Goldberg going against the NWO, people like DDP going against the NWO, people like Sting going against the NWO, those were the people that, although the NWO was over, you had a lot of the majority of the fans looking for those people who could defy the odds and go against the NWO and make sure that they are null and void. That's good booking, man. You just don't have some cattle prod destroy a character. You just don't. It just doesn't make any sense at all. So let us know in the chat room or through the live wearewrestling.net stream, or call live 347-884-8452. Let us know your thoughts. Many different avenues to let us know your thoughts, and I would be more than happy to address them and say them. This is a very interactive show, as many people know, has been supporting us for the past 2.5 years. Episode 136, we will continue with Raw, with the announcement that Vince McMahon said was, if Team Authority loses, they'll no longer be in power. Now, I'm really interested to see, what Cena's part is, what Team Cena's part is, because if it's just a one-sided, if it's just a one-sided stipulation, it wouldn't make any sense. It's much more suspenseful when there's both sides, when there's a stipulation for both sides, because usually if it's just an authority type thing, they'll probably win. If it's just an authority, they'll probably win and defy the odds. But if it's like John Cena must leave, must be suspended, or John Cena gets his world title shot revoked, or something to that nature, that would make sense. And just think about it this way. We're setting up for Royal Rumble coming back in January. It would make so much sense if you had Randy Orton. Now, they're talking about him being the number two babyface again if he commits to more dates on SmackDown. I really don't want to see another face run anytime soon for Orton, because he's only been heel for about 15 months. When he turned against Daniel Bryan last year. And when he was faced before that turn, it got really bland and it just kind of faded out. And so I don't want to see that. I think Randy Orton as a heel has a little bit more life left in him, and I just don't want to see another face run by Randy Orton. And Randy Orton has said in many interviews that he prefers being a heel anyways, so you might as well just, why not just allow him to be a heel. But just real quick, fantasy booking, real quick. What if you do it this way? What if you have Randy Orton play the face role with defying the odds with the authority? He gets curb stomped on the steps, as we saw on Raw. We'll get to that. So wonder if he goes with Team Cena, and of course, they're doing all that to write him off TV. I reported on the Crave Wrestling Facebook page for the Condemned 2. But say he comes back to be on Team Cena for Survivor Series, and John Cena's stipulation is if Cena's team loses, Cena would be out of a world title shot at the Royal Rumble. So you have Randy Orton side with John Cena, not because he's Cena's friend, but because he's anti-authority, right? So you have Randy Orton and John Cena as the last two people on Team Cena. And you have Big Show, Ryback, and Dolph Ziggler be three other good names. So you have Orton and Cena against the authority, and you have Cena and Orton, the last two people, and Orton gets eliminated, and he gets upset. Rollins do a quick roll up or something to that nature. So Cena against the world. Cena defies the odds. Cena and Rollins and Kane, or maybe even Rollins was the last person there. So you have Randy Orton come back and RKO John Cena, makes him even a stronger heel, and then on the following Raw, you have Randy Orton come out and say, I'm not Cena's crony, I'm not working for Cena, how dare Cena try to get me on his team, I'm the real number one contender, and then all of a sudden, you have Cena and Orton fighting for the number one contendership. Brock Lesnar comes back, and then you have a triple threat match with Cena, Orton, Lesnar, all at Survivor Series. So that's my fantasy booking in a nutshell. And I think that a triple threat match at Royal Rumble between Cena, Orton, and Lesnar would be much more intriguing than another Cena versus Lesnar match. I just, you know, another Cena versus Lesnar match is just not really going to cut it for me. It's just a no at all for me. Doesn't make any sense. I understand why they, you know, had the match in disqualification. I get it. And you know, I understand why that was the case. But it's just going to lead to another Cena versus Lesnar one-on-one match. If so, I'll pass on that for sure. Next, we have Dean Ambrose against Cesaro. It was some stat that I saw somewhere. I think, yeah, Vince Russo actually said this in his letter to Vince McMahon that he wrote. That was a very, and made a ton of sense. And him being one of the writers, albeit a very controversial writer, him being one of the writers of Raw time, he was talking about the segments, and he was talking about how, you know, there was only about 7 segments that actually made sense to him, and the other 9 didn't make sense at all. And he made some really good points, and this was one of them. He said something to the nature of, they fought so many times and so many days without any kind of build. Doesn't make any sense at all. I totally agree with Vince Russo in this regard. Dean Ambrose against Cesaro, all of those times between Raw and SmackDown with no build at all, how in the world is that making any sense to the Bray Wyatt interference on Dean Ambrose, other than us hearing random Bray Wyatt promos of, you're just like me? Come on now. That's just horrible, horrible booking that doesn't really appreciate the builds. I mean, you have to build right. You have to build right. Without question, you have to build right. And how in the world are we supposed to be excited about a Bray Wyatt versus Dean Ambrose feud if only thing we hear are promos from Bray Wyatt, maybe a few from Dean Ambrose, but most of the time we're seeing Dean Ambrose and Cesaro fight? Doesn't make any sense at all. So I totally agree with Russo on that. By the way, Bray Wyatt was sitting on the ramp, on the stage, while Dean Ambrose defeated Cesaro again, just like he defeated Cesaro on SmackDown on the Trick or Street Fight match, and just continued to drive Cesaro down the drain by putting him in the revised Dirty Deeds finisher. It's a double arm DDT now, as opposed to the EC3 style finishing move that's done at, just, you know, some, like a reverse facebuster DDT style move that doesn't really make much sense. It's hard to sell as well. I like the revision. I think it's a better idea. It's more sellable. It's more main event style than what he did. But it just doesn't make any sense. I don't like the concept at all of continuing to put Ambrose and Cesaro in matches for the sake of Bray Wyatt sitting on a ramp and the lights go off. And it just doesn't make any sense at all. Bad idea to do that. Without question, bad, bad, bad idea. So 347-884-8452. Maybe be able to take a call or two here if we have some time. Again, Derek is out with a strep throat, so we may have we'll have more time to open it up for comments, calls, questions. Let us know through Twitter or Crave Wrestling Facebook page, or the live stream over at wearewrestling.net. Miz defeating Jimmy Uso. I don't know. Well, it's been reported that they're going to do a multi-team match at Survivor Series, which I'm totally on board with. This reminds me of the old, you know, 87 and 88 Survivor Series matches when they did the 10-man tag team, the 10-team tag team matches. But now it seems like it's going to be a bunch of teams against each other, which I'm okay with, especially if you can have a different team on each side of the pole. So essentially you could have 8 teams total and just people just randomly tag people in. I'm okay with that. If we're thinking of 8 teams, and the reason I'm saying this is because it seems like The Miz and Damian Mizdow will be one of those teams, along with the Usos and Los Matadores, who have been defeating Gold and Stardust in singles competition. So we have Los Matadores, we have Golden Stardust, we have the Usos, we have The Miz and Damian Mizdow, we have probably Slater Gator, and 3 other teams, I would imagine. I don't even know what 3 other teams that would work in that regard. Maybe you bring Harper and Rowan back. Possibly you bring Harper and Rowan back, but with these vignettes of Luke Harper by himself, and then Eric Rowan just appearing on SmackDown, sitting down watching the See No Evil movie. That's a great way to have all these vignettes, and that's a great way of having Eric Rowan come back, is to have him be on a couch with watching See No Evil. Sure, that's a great way to bring him back. We're supposed to believe his character now because that's the way that he came back. So, again, just bad way of character development there. But, I mean, you know, sound off. Let me know if you can think of 3 other teams. Again, if we're doing 8 teams for Survivor Series to go against each other, we have Slater Gator, Los Matadores, Usos, Golden Stardust, and The Miz and Damian Mizdow. And maybe you bring up a few teams from NXT, maybe the Ascension, maybe the Vaudevillains, maybe Big Cass and Enzo Amore. Maybe, you know, maybe you have that. But the point being, there's not 8 solid teams, so they probably would just do 4 and not have Slater Gator in there. They'll probably have The Miz and Damian Mizdow, Usos, Golden Stardust, and Los Matadores. So, and I'm okay with that. A multi-team tag team match fits the tradition of Survivor Series, and I'm sure they're going to have a non-advertised mid-card, you know, traditional match that'll probably have, you know, people like Slater Gator and Tyson Kidd and you know, some other random baby faces, maybe R-Truth and Kofi Kingston, Big E, Jack Swagger. Yeah, part of the card, just a random traditional mid-card match. So it makes sense. The Miz and Damian Mizdow and the Usos feud makes sense into the whole tag team picture here. So good choices. Looks like we have about 3 or 4 correct answers. I saw the Zodiac out there as well. So far we have Brutus Beefcake, we have Booty Man, we have the Zodiac, and the Disciple. So that's 4. The other 2 is Brother Brutai, and also he was the Man with No Name. The Man with No Name. When he was leaving the Dungeon of Doom and he got kicked out and he was a reject, he was the Zodiac, and then he wasn't the Zodiac anymore, And then he turned into the Man with No Name. Whoa, that's that's very compelling. When he was the Man with No Name, wow. So he was amidst of. I would say Ed Leslie has to be one of the most tossed around gimmicks, other than Brutus Beefcake. There were so many gimmicks that about him that was just. That was just tossed around when he left the. He had like amnesia and didn't make any sense at all. When he was with the Faces of Fear, when he was the Butcher and he got kicked out as the Butcher, then he became the Man with No Name, and then he joined the Dungeon as the Zodiac. So the Zodiac was in between the Butcher and. The Man with No Name was in between the Butcher and the Zodiac. That's the way it went. It was like 95 or something around there when he came, Faces of Fear, and then the Butcher, the Man with No Name, and then the Zodiac. And then, you know, and then he started to become pro Hulk Hogan, and then he went to the Booty Man. So, yeah. This guy was just tossed every which away. I could just imagine Ed Leslie being in the back saying something to the regard of, yeah, so what's what do you got for me now, Eric or Kevin Sullivan or whoever was head of booking at that time. So what you got for me now? All right, so what we're going to do is we're going to have you leave the Faces of Fear. And now we're going to have you go, how about this? How about, I got this perfect idea for you. How about you leave the Faces of Fear, and how about you go by the Man with No Name? How's that sound to you? And, of course, Ed Leslie would say something to the regard of, yeah, it sounds great, very reluctantly, because this is how he's making his money. But it's really sad when you have people with such a legendary name, with such a legendary character, such as Brutus the Barber Beefcake was, to go to the WCW for probably more money, because at that time they were just passing out checks like crazy with tons of zeros behind them, and willing to really sell your legacy for a buck. I mean, that's really how it was, I mean, essentially. I'm sure Hogan had a lot to do with Beefcake coming over to WCW, but it was really to his demise, because other than the Disciple, the hiccup of a run that he had as the Disciple, he really didn't do anything else. It was really sad to see Ed Leslie being tossed like that as a gimmick. And we've got an announcement coming up here soon as far as another interview coming up. But, yeah, bringing in Ed Leslie, yeah, that's we're going to do some work as far as getting him on the show, because I would really like to talk to him as far as what was it? How was it backstage when he – all these random – dead-end gimmicks was given to him. Really, really sad. But next trivia question, what move became a title of a theme song by Coco Beware? What move became a title of a theme song by Coco Beware? Next, we have Tyson Kidd defeating Sheamus. And for those who don't know why Kid and why Sheamus and Rusev pulled double duty on Raw is because the U.S. title match was relatively a last-minute decision. They weren't really booked to go against each other until Survivor Series, but they're really plugging this network thing so much, and they really want people to get – they really want the subs to go up to, you know, a million, that – they're doing the free thing for November, and they wanted to add another element to why you must get the network, and that was Sheamus versus Rusev. And, of course, the writing was on the wall as far as who was going to win that match. But I actually booked the Rusev's road to becoming U.S. champion. Well, I really, the road to Rusev and Roman Reigns, actually, because I put Roman Reigns in there, too. And I think that Rusev winning the U.S. title was a part of my road, you know, to him, to his character just evolving. And we'll get to that soon. But why would you have Sheamus lose a match by countout? I mean, there's so many rewrites throughout, you know, the week on Raw. That's been well reported that there's so many rewrites in the script. Why didn't you just rewrite Sheamus beating the tar out of Tyson Kidd, which, albeit the guy has a ton of ability and he's doing very well rebranding himself in NXT, although he loses more matches than he wins there, but at least he is one of the main event guys in NXT. So, you know, for the most part, he's doing a good job rebranding himself. But why would you have him jump up to television for, you know, a random spot on Raw to beat Sheamus by countout? That makes absolutely no sense. If you want Rusev to win the U.S. championship against Sheamus, granted, Sheamus doesn't really lose matches in the first place, so why don't you just rewrite the script and just say, have Sheamus squash Tyson Kidd? Because there's not going to be any feud that's going to come out of this. There was no point in doing that, really. And there's just no build. There's going to be no continuation on the Tyson Kidd Sheamus match. Most likely Tyson Kidd's going to go down to NXT to lose against Adrian Neville for the umpteenth time. So it just didn't make any sense to me. It was really head scratching, and there was just no point to it. There was absolutely no point to that part of the show whatsoever. You should have just had Sheamus beat up. I mean, you really should have had Sheamus beat up Tyson Kidd and squash him to make him look stronger. Granted, yeah, you did bro kick him post match, but yeah, that really didn't mean anything. You know, at the end of the day, it really didn't mean anything. You still lost. So that's my point as far as having. That should have happened. That should have been a rewrite from Raw that really didn't make any sense. And I agree with, you know, as far as Russo's take on it, too. It just didn't make any sense at all. And then you have the Dolph Ziggler segment, which has some life to it, simply because it's making, at least it's giving Dolph Ziggler some credit. At least it could have, you know, I'm okay with that. You know, I'm okay with that. I'm okay with the fact that they're giving Zack Ryder, albeit, you know, he's losing, you know, he loses a lot of non-title Intercontinental Championship matches, which I totally don't like at all. I think it's a horrible idea. But one thing I do appreciate is they are at least giving him some love as far as just becoming a major name, having a really an important spot in the segments and on the Raw scripts. I'm okay with that. So basically what we saw was, of course, Dolph Ziggler coming out for a match. And of course, the Authority comes out and pitches a spot for Ziggler. Then Ziggler rejects that, and Triple H schedules an Intercontinental Championship match against Seth Rollins. I also tweeted during the show that I would have been okay with Seth Rollins winning the Intercontinental Championship, as a matter of fact, because I like Ziggler with the championship, but we need to bring more prestige back to that title, period. And I don't think that Seth Rollins would lose as much with the title than Dolph Ziggler is currently losing right now. So at least Seth Rollins would bring prestige back to the Intercontinental Championship if they did decide to put it on him. So that's the reason why I'm okay. I'm still not sold on Seth Rollins as a character. But if you give him an Intercontinental Championship, if you give him a mid-card title, it'll take away from him being in kind of like in the upper mid-card slash main event scene, because I still don't think he's a main event guy. But if you give him a mid-card title, I think it'll do a good job with building his character and really kind of helping him ascend to the, you know, it'll make him ascend more to the top, as opposed to just throwing him in there right now. So I would much rather see that. I'd much rather see a mid-card title win and then an ascension to the main event. That would have been much, much better. So, you know, I think that would have been a better idea. I would have been okay with that. But, you know, because Dolph Ziggler kept the Intercontinental Championship, you know, maybe they'll do something better with him. But it seems like he's going to overcome the odds and you know, join up with Team Cena. That's all in dandy, yeah, but at the end of the day, what is that going to do to the Intercontinental Championship? So we need to be thinking titles here. We need to be thinking, you know, that's what it's all about. The whole title thing, the title picture is where it's supposed to be, and that's what we need to focus on. So I definitely think that would have been that's a better storyline than this Dolph Ziggler overcoming the odds crap that we're seeing right now. Give some more time on TV, but at the end of the day, he's just going to be fighting for Team Cena. So doesn't make too much sense at all. So next we have Seth Rollins defeating Dolph Ziggler by DQ because of Randy Orton. And, of course, he was getting his pops because he was doing the RKOs out of nowhere. I understand that. Makes sense. It was fun to see that type of Randy Orton. Is you know, it's more intriguing than the face runs that we saw him before he made the turn at SummerSlam of last year. However, at the end of the day, it's still not going to make much sense as far as it's going to get eventually stale. It is. Period. It's going to eventually get stale. And like I said, I think that Randy Orton gimmick, that way of Randy Orton would be much better. But you know, we're having this Orton and Rollins thing going on, and I think the writing was on the wall as far as them going to write Orton off and how they're going to have Orton and Rollins and what they're going to do at the end. It was pretty much dead set on what they're going to do with that. So, you know, although it was interesting to see Randy Orton just become like a lunatic, the end was pretty much well written in stone. So, yeah. But before the end, at least that was good to see. And of course, he demanded a match against Rollins backstage, and Triple H gives it to him. Here's the thing with Titus O'Neil. We're going to the next match with Ryback. I want to start off the good news. Well, I'm going to start with the bad news. The bad news is Titus O'Neil is totally just makes no sense at all, and thanks for the pick of the disciple. Definitely such a huge difference than Brutus Beefcake, and feel free in the We Are Wrestling live stream, feel free to put a pickup of Brutus Beefcake if you can too, just for people to see the stark contrast of the disciple versus Brutus Beefcake. But you have someone like Titus O'Neil, who with the primetime players, you had a team that was getting over. You had the millions of dollars, you know, chant and the moves making much sense. However, you have that, but at the same time, you decided to split them up. Now, understand that you want to split them up. The purpose was to really make Titus O'Neil a credible heel, but split up led to a feud between Darren Young and Titus O'Neil. Now, when you think of key split ups that really made one of the two a big star, you think about really solidified tag teams, and you think about tag teams that were really over. Say, for instance, Harlem Heat split, Booker T became a star, but they already won the tag team titles like 10 times. The Rockers split, Shawn Michaels became a star, but the Rockers was one of the best tag teams in the entire WWE. The Hart Foundation split, Bret Hart became a star, but the Hart Foundation was, again, one of the best tag teams in all of professional wrestling history. The Bulldog split. British Bulldog became a star, but the Bulldog's one of the best. The Steiners with Scott Steiner. So when you think of all of the main event guys that became, you know, either Intercontinental or a mid-card champion, became a really big name, or even world champion, those are because the teams that they split up from were already well-established teams. So staying in that vein, you weren't really going to get much from Titus O'Neil in the first place, because the primetime players were actually working their way up to become a good tag team. So they were getting over with the chants and the poses and the swing, million of dollars. They were getting over, but they weren't established at all. They weren't an established tag team. So if you decided to make that type of split, it was way too premature, because that team just wasn't they just weren't a good tag team. They just weren't an established tag team yet. They were getting good, but they weren't an established tag team by any stretch of the imagination to break up the team. So didn't make any sense at all. And that's exactly why you have what you have now, with Darren Young being, you know, reported to be the bunny when he comes back. And even when he does come back, he's not going to really make a mark in the WWE, sadly. And then you have Titus O'Neil, who's one minute he's in NXT making some noise, and the next minute he's jobbing out to another, you know, mid-card guy. And the next minute he's teaming up with Heath Slater, Slater Gator. So this guy is, he made the split, and he's not even established as a heel, as a mid-card heel at the moment. Especially all the times he was losing to Adam Rose. I remember there was a SmackDown that I went to. He lost to him twice. So, you know, why split up a team if you're not going to do anything with either one of them? It just doesn't make sense at all. You might as well just keep the team and let them really hone their craft as a tag team. A lot of times when you have two mid-card wrestlers who are just wallowing in nothing, putting them together actually helps. Like Ryback Axel is a perfect example. You had Ryback and you had Curtis Axel, who both were former Heyman guys, that those were failed projects. You put them together, they weren't the best team, but they were a solid tag team. They worked well together. They had good chemistry. They had a good look together. And their music, you know, the mashup of their music wasn't bad at all. So Ryback's worked. So nowadays, you know, Curtis Axel is jobbing on Main Event, and Ryback is trying to do what he failed at a couple years ago. So hopefully this part, at least Ryback is getting another chance to become over like he tried to in 2012, and they just threw him in the Hell in a Cell because John Cena was injured. And it could have worked, but like I said in previous shows, the Shield decimated Ryback, period. I mean, they decimated, the Shield killed the babyface career of Ryback just because of the Attack of Survivor Series, and then when he lost at TLC in the six-man match, and then when he lost the TLC match at the 20th anniversary of Raw against CM Punk. So he just kept losing and losing and losing. And, yeah, the Shield just really jacked him up really, really, really bad. So nowadays, the Shield's not around anymore. So hopefully this will be another chance of Ryback becoming a legitimate mid-card to main event babyface. Sadly, the difference between now and 2 years ago is that the big gold belt is no longer a title in the WWE. The World Heavyweight Championship is no longer. And that's what really hurts people like Ryback, people like Dolph Ziggler, you know, people like, you know, even Cody Rhodes, you know, to an extent. Not having the big gold belt really hurts them, because I don't see any of those people becoming WWE World Heavyweight Champion anytime soon, or to maybe one or two of those people ever. Sadly, because there's no more big gold belt. So, you know, it gets to the point where hopefully this works for Ryback. But when you have so many people on the roster and you only have one major title, and that major title is held by Brock Lesnar, and the only people that it's been on this year has been Randy Orton, Daniel Bryan, John Cena, and Brock Lesnar. And those are the only four people that really has a chance of getting it. Probably Roman Reigns coming up toward WrestleMania. But the WWE has already set that precedent. They've already set that bar that we're not just going to have some mid-card grab the title and have a run with it. The problem with that is you have so many people on the roster that you're not going to have many people grab, you know, you're not going to have many people capture that title because of that, because the bar is set so high and becoming champion. So it's really sad, you know, for those people, for the Rybacks and for the Rhodes and for the Zigglers, because they don't have the big gold belt. But we also have people talking about, you know, you need to merge the mid-card championships. That would be even worse. I mean, explain, someone who believes in that theory, and please explain to me the logic of why the WWE should unify the mid-card champions if they have so many people on the roster that they're not doing much of with anyways. You have to learn how to build stars, and if you have a bunch of people on the roster and most of them aren't even vying for a championship because there's only two of them, just in case, with the theory of having the one major title and one mid-card title, that there's only two titles to vie for, what's the point of anybody coming up from NXT? It just wouldn't make any sense at all. Because even beforehand, even 10 years ago, you still had the Cruiserweight Championship to work with. And even before that, you even had the, you know, the European Championship to work with. So, you know, you can't come to me with this crap saying that, you know, having two mid-card championships doesn't make sense. The WWE's really always had two mid-card championships. If it wasn't the Intercontinental and Cruiserweight or Light Heavyweight Championship, it was the Intercontinental and European Championship. So ever since the mid-90s, you know, mid to late 90s, they've always had, you know, almost the past 20 years, they've always had a mid-card championship. And even before then, the Intercontinental Championship was booked so well that they didn't need two titles to work with. And even back, you know, 25 years ago, you know, you had half of the roster were jobbers anyways. So, you know, you would never see Iron Mike Sharp or someone like SD Jones becoming any kind of championship, you know, any kind of champion at all. They wouldn't, if they were even a jobber championship, they wouldn't even win that. That's how bad that they were. So, and even like a Brooklyn Brawler, you would never see them win, or a Barry Horowitz. They would have never won a mid-card championship in the first place. They were designated jobbers. They were popular, they were known, but they were still very designated jobbers. So, speaking of Barry Horowitz, this guy was actually pretty good. He actually made a name in GWF, Global Wrestling Federation, and he'll be also a good person to bring on the show. So, got a couple names that we talked about that want to show. Speaking of that, real quick break for a social media plug. If you have any ideas, of course, I write for wrestling.com. I have a weekly post called Retro Wednesday. And, of course, if you want me to write any columns on wearewrestling.net, just go over and go to cravewrestling@gmail.com. Send me a question, send me an idea, or you can tweet at Crave Wrestling. And I'll, you know, of course, I'll embed your tweet and have your Twitter handle and or have your Twitter handle be publicized if you do this. But, yeah, just let us know, you know, what you think, or just send us a question or a thought, and I'll write about it personally. I'll write about it. So if there's anybody you want to see on the show, if there's anybody you want to hear interviewed, if there's someone who, you know, hasn't been in wrestling for, you know, 10, 15 years that you're wondering where are they now, I'll be more than happy to, you know, have my team do some research and find out where they are and bring them on the show. Actually, that's going on right now, as early as today, where there's a big name that is on the prowl of being on the show. And, you know, I think that having interviews of where are they nows is really cool, just to see what they're doing post, you know, professional wrestling, you know, post WWE, post WCW, even post ECW. So let us know. We'll be more than happy to, you know, do the research and put in the work to bring them in. Of course, that's cravewrestling@gmail.com, cravewrestling@gmail.com, or just follow at Crave Wrestling. And, of course, we'll be right back with more of Raw.
You are now listening to the Pancakes and Power Slam Show by Crave Wrestling on Blog Talk Radio. Be sure to follow Crave Wrestling on Twitter at Crave Wrestling and join the Facebook fan page Crave Wrestling.
Big Show and Mark Henry are having an angle right now of you're my best friend, man. We rode together. You sat at my table. We cried together. Blood, sweat, and tears. We've been in this business for so long. And the angle is, I'm jealous that you did this to Rusev and I didn't do this to Rusev, and you're jealous of me. That's the reason why you tagged me without my permission. So that leads into a Mark Henry heel turn. Now, although I'm not a opponent of Mark Henry heel turns by any stretch, I actually think that Mark Henry is more aggressive, and I love his ad-libs as a heel. I wish that he would do that as a face and become like a no-nonsense baby face. That would be really cool. But even as a heel, you know, his ad-libs are just amazing to me. Just like, and I tweeted one yesterday, he said, I'm the new Andre the Giant. I think that, my goodness, I mean, Mark Henry and his ad-libs are a prize. They're just absolutely amazing. I'm the new Andre the Giant, just absolutely amazing to me. And that is really the funniest thing that comes out of this angle. Because as you saw in their match on Raw, there's not going to be any little to no athleticism. Very clear. The match made it very clear. I think that if you really want to make this some type of match, you got to put some type of stipulation to it. You've got to put both of them on, you know, team Cena and Team Authority, respectively. You can't just have a one-on-one match between these two. Now, granted, a few years ago they had a feud too, and they had a one-on-one match. I get it. Makes sense. A couple of years ago, when Mark Henry was in the Hall of Pain, that was mostly his. That was his deal. That was his niche, being in the Hall of Pain. Made sense. But now, not so much, because the Hall of Pain isn't really his gimmick anymore. So that really doesn't fly. And you also have, you know, they both are getting older. So just a one-on-one match between Mark Henry and the Big Show, I think that's probably why they decided to make it on Raw, because they probably knew that it wasn't going to fly well as far as being in the ring. And I think that it made sense to, if you're going to extend this feud, just don't have it a one-on-one match without any stipulation. Because it's just not going to work out. Yeah, you know, Big Show won by disqualification, but Mark Henry World Strongest Slams Big Show on the steps. See, that is the type of stuff that I'm okay with, because it makes Mark Henry a stronger heel, and it also helps the feud, but not. It doesn't make us anticipate Big Show and Mark Henry wrestling one-on-one in a regular singles match, because the lethargic, lazy type of feel that we got while they were in the ring on Raw pretty much says it all. So put them both on Team Cena and Team Authority, or have some type of stipulation match. If you want to extend it to TLC, I'm okay with that, as long as it's like a chairs match, or, you know, even a tables match. It would be interesting to see one of them go through a table. Even if you had a tables match between Big Show and Mark Henry, you know, I'll be okay with that. But you got to put a stipulation. Even a cage match, you have to put a stipulation in there, period. Otherwise, it's just going to be a bad idea. It's just, they had a cage match a few years ago during Mark Henry's Hall of Pain, and it worked, because, you know, he used the cage to his advantage. He rammed the Big Show in the cage, and it worked. It was impressive. It looked impressive. And, you know, this is one of those things that you're really going to have to do something. You're going to have to put some work in this. Otherwise, it's going to be boring. And there's nothing about this feud that, from a one-on-one standpoint, that people are really going to look forward to. So you're really going to have to do something with this feud to spice it up, to make it interesting. Otherwise, it's not going to be a good idea at all. And the correct answer is pile driver. It looks like we have that. What move became a title of a theme song by Coco Beware? And that song is Pile Driver. Pile Driver. Interesting song from Coco Beware back in the day. And our five of the week, by the way, is going to be, we're going to talk about Survivor Series, a couple tweaks on Survivor Series 1991 and 1995. I'm just going to skim through it, and we're going to talk about more in depth next week. I'm sure that Derek wants to chime in, and of course he's out with Shut Throat. So of course, once again, let us just give Derek your thoughts and prayers for a speedy recovery. But we're just going to gloss over Survivor Series 91 and 95, and actually we're going to do this. We're going to talk about the gravest challenge between The Undertaker and Hulk Hogan. So we're going to tweak it a little bit. We're going to go further into Survivor Series 91 to 95, Part 2, which is to go. Much more in depth to each card and each match. But we are going to talk about the gravest challenge of them all, Hulk Hogan versus The Undertaker. So stay tuned with us in just a few as we talk about that. But, of course, we have Nikki Bella defeating Emma. This is the pro that I like about Nikki Bella. And this is the pro that I like about Brie Bella being Nikki Bella's assistant. The pro of this is that we don't have to see some random, ridiculous, mic work. Every week we're coming out and seeing poor acting by Nikki Bella and Brie Bella. We don't have to see that. I'm okay with that, because this 30-day thing, it's not being highlighted. It's not being exposed so much that you're getting tired of it. In fact, they're doing more of a Nikki Bella, having her solo heel run, and Brie just being there, as we saw on SmackDown when Nikki Bella won the number one contender Diva Battle Royal. So, in fact, I'm actually okay with that. You know, Nikki Bella having her own heel run apart from whatever she's doing with Brie Bella. I'm okay with that. I think that's a good idea, because the Nikki Bella and Brie Bella, that became such a bad idea. It was just a bad idea. It worked on paper when Nikki made the turn at SummerSlam, but preceding weeks and months of booking that was just a disaster. And so, after these 30 days were up, it'll be interesting to see what they're going to do with that. I don't think that they can do any worse. So hopefully we will see something much better. But, you know, I really, really hope that they don't continue with this crap with Nikki and Brie Bella. Again, the only thing that I would maybe be okay with is some type of stipulation at TLC or some type of Team Nikki versus Team Brie. That'll be a good way to highlight the divas. you know, maybe that'll work. If Team Bree wins, you know, she doesn't have to be her assistant anymore. Or if Team Nikki wins, she has to be her assistant for another month. Something to that regard. But just Nikki and Bree all by themselves, not a good idea at all. So I'm glad that we are seeing Nikki just develop her heel persona more. I think that's a good idea. I think that's a really good idea because we're getting, you know, Nikki versus Bree was not a good idea. And sad for Emma. Emma really should go back to NXT because Emma, when she was with Santino, who, by the way, is coming out of retirement, so that should be pretty fun to watch. But when Emma was in NXT, she was doing really well. When she got called up from NXT, when she was with Santino, it was a good spot for her to have. Of course, she had the violation that they let her go, and they brought her right back. But even bringing her right back, it didn't do anything for her because she didn't win matches at all. So Emma, you know, it's sad for Emma because, you know, she's a good talent. And as good as the Divas or the women's division is in NXT, they really, unless you're in a feud right now, you really need to, like what Cameron, you know, did at the Total Divas episode, she decided to go back to NXT, you know, to really hone her craft. I think that's a good idea for just about everybody because NXT is such a hotbed for good women's wrestling. Of course, you have Charlotte, my favorite, Bayley, just because I love her gimmick and just the athleticism she has. And of course, you have Becky Lynch, you have Sasha Banks, you know, and the list goes on as far as Carmella. She's making her presence, you know, from Big Cass and Enzo Amore. So, and even Natalya, you know, still being affiliated with NXT. So, people like, you know, Alicia Fox or people like Emma, especially someone like Emma, you know, they can really help. It would help them by just mostly being in NXT. Now, granted, Emma was in NXT recently, and she lost her match, to Charlotte. But, those are the type of things that NXT should be for. Not only should it help, you know, upcoming talent like the Baron Corbins of this world, who I think very highly of, and like the Adrian Nevilles, of course, and Sami Zayn's and so on and so forth. But it also should be a place to rebrand people. Like they'll put Titus O'Neil down there and he'll win matches, actually. He beats Sami Zayn. But, he won a tag team match, too, with Tyson Kidd. But, you know, he'll come up to regular TV and lose every match. So Emma, you know, her going back to NXT may help her because being on television is just not going to help her at all. Rusev defeating Zack Ryder. I posted a tweet on the Facebook site of Zack Ryder saying that the internet championship is on 2K15, but he's not. So, and that's sad too. That's really sad. You decide to have the internet championship, but not Zack Ryder. That is really a shame. And I don't know if that inspired Zack Ryder to have the squash that he did. At least he got a broski boot in, but the squash, relative squash that he did had from Rusev. But it's really sad. People like Zack Ryder, you know, the best thing that WWE did for him was give him over 1 million Twitter followers. That's really the best thing that Zack Ryder did. He's a good PR guy. He's a good promoter, obviously, because the, you know, the Z True Long Island stories, those worked. The WWE name gave him credibility to get the followers. The U.S. title helped him as well. But other than that, it's really, really tough for Zack Ryder. And, you know, he may have to count his losses. And he may have to possibly go to somewhere else. I don't know if GFW is a good home for Zack Ryder, but possibly. Possibly. And, of course, Stephanie offers Lana a spot for Rusev on Team Authority. Lana says she'll confer with Vladimir Putin. Rusev on Team Authority for Survivor Series, it doesn't sound bad. However, I think that I wouldn't want to put Rusev on there just because I think he needs every single moment to build his heel character. And I think since Survivor Series is one of the big four pay-per-views, having him kind of meshed in with a 10-man tag, I don't think that would do a really good job with helping his character at all. So I wouldn't put him on a traditional match. And back to the tag team conversation, of course, Fernando defeating Stardust. We'll see a multi-team tag team match, and I'm okay with Los Matadores being in there. Seth Rollins defeating Randy Orton. A bridge pin and a good match, clean pin. A way for Orton to put over Rollins, just like Orton put over Reigns. So I suppose Dean Ambrose is next. But Orton shakes hands with Mercury and Noble and Kane, and he RKOs Rollins. Triple H tries to stop Orton, but gets hit. Then the Authority attacks Orton, and Triple H looks at him and reluctantly approves and says, finish it. Just like, basically, he was getting, you know, prodded by Stephanie to finish it. And the finish was Seth Rollins curb-stomping Randy Orton on a steel steps, and like I tweeted, you know, there's your way to write him off. And real quick, the tweet that I had, what Mark Henry said was, he told Big Show, I'm the new Andre the Giant. You understand? I love it. Just his ad libs are priceless. I think that's one of the best parts of Mark Henry as a heel, his heel ad libs, especially the the trickery that he did with John Cena to lead to their match at Money in the Bank. He said, "You think it's that easy? I got a lot left in the tank." I will never forget that line from Mark Henry. I would never forget it ever in my life. And I think it's absolutely hilarious that he did that and said that. It's absolutely funny. You think it's that easy? I got a lot left in the tank. And then, of course, we saw at the on the WWE Network, for those who subscribe to the WWE Network, that we have a new U.S. champion with Rusev. We covered most of it. And the biggest takeaway I have from this is I think it's a great idea by making Rusev the U.S. champion. Now they have this momentum with Rusev. He's one of the best heels. And I still think he's the purest heel in the WWE, period. Now they need to take this moment and continue to run with it. Continue to build Rusev as a heel. Have him beat Sheamus again. You know, have him beat bigger names, even like a Cena or something. There has to be the big payoff will be this. The big payoff is someone defeating him for the title at WrestleMania. Someone patriotic or someone like a Ryback, which is my choice. I've said that before on the show. Ryback is my choice to do that. That would be a good job to really help his babyface character and give him a mid-card title. Even a Roman Reigns, you know, if they don't want to if they don't want to make him a top guy come Survivor, come WrestleMania, Roman Reigns, but I'm sure by Mania he'll be champ. Or at, well, let me rephrase that. At Mania, he'll be champ. I think a Daniel Bryan would work too. A lot of people said Kurt Angle. Of course, that would be the number one choice just because of the patriotic, but Angle's most likely not coming back to the WWE because of the schedule. So I think really Ryback and Daniel Bryan are really the only two options that you have. Cena and Rusev at Mania, it'll revive the U.S. title, but it just, I highly doubt that we'll see Cena becoming, you know, Cena wrestling for the United States Championship. And it would be ridiculous for the U.S. title not to be up for grabs on a one-on-one match with John Cena at WrestleMania. It wouldn't make any sense at all. So Daniel Bryan or Ryback would be the two options. So we'll see what they do with Rusev as the U.S. champion. Even if they put like a Russia thing, kind of like with Lance Storm and Team Canada, when he won the U.S. title, he rechristened it as the Canadian Heavyweight Championship. I wonder if they'll do that with Rusev with the Russian Heavyweight Championship. That'd be pretty fun. Real quick, Flavor of the Week coming up. Real quick, we'll talk about the Flavor of the Week. Here we go.
It is now time for the Flavor of the Week.
All right, we got 60 seconds to talk about the Flavor of the Week. Flavor of the Week this week is we're going to talk about the gravest challenge of them all, Undertaker, Hulk Hogan. Undertaker really made his presence known at that time, and I definitely think that we are going to, I think it's a great idea to make the Undertaker that important year into his run to make him such an important character. So, yeah, we'll talk about more of that next week. That was really the coming out party of the Undertaker with the gravest challenge, defeating Hulk Hogan, of course, with help with Ric Flair, but it was awesome to me. It was a very interesting way of really making the Undertaker someone, and he became the WWE champion at that time. So thank you so much. Next week, 347-884-8452. Sorry that we didn't get the calls. We'll be sure to call next week. We'll see you next week. God bless. Goodbye.